under 6 seconds. Peter guessed at the time it had taken them to reach this stage from the go. It was as swift and neat as it had never been in training, all of them armed by the knowledge of waiting death and horror. In unison, Peter and his number two hurled their combined strength and weight onto the releases of the emergency escape hatch, and it flew inwards readily, for there was no pressurization to resist. And at exactly the same instant, the stun grenades went in cleanly, thrown by the waiting grenade men, and all four members of Peter's team bowed like Mohammedans in prayer to Mecca, covering eyes and ears. Even outside the cabin, and even with ears and eyes covered, the thunder of the explosions was appalling, seeming to beat in upon the brain with oppressive physical force. And the glare of burning phosphorus powder painted an X-ray picture of Peter's own fingers on the fleshy red of his closed eyelids. Then the grenade men were shouting into the interior, "Lie down! Everybody, lie down!" They would keep repeating that order, Israeli style, as long as it lasted. Peter was a hundredth of a second slow, numbed by the blast, fumbling slightly at the butt of the Walter, thumbing the hammer as it snapped out of the quick-release holster, and then he went in, feet first through the hatch, like a runner sliding for home base. He was still in the air when he saw the girl in the red shirt running forward, brandishing the camera, and screaming something that made no sense, though his brain registered it, even in that unholy moment. He fired as his feet touched the deck, and his first shot hit the girl in the mouth, punching a dark red hole through the rows of white teeth, and snapping her head back so viciously that he heard the small, delicate bones of her neck crackle as they broke. Ingrid used both arms to cover eyes and ears, crouching forward into the appalling blast of sound and light that swept through the crowded cabins like a hurricane wind. And even when it had passed, she was reeling wildly, clutching for support at a seat back, trying to steady herself, and judged the moment when the attackers were into the hull. Those outside the hull would escape the direct force of the explosives she was about to detonate. There was a high survival chance for them. She wanted to judge the moment when the entire assault team penetrated the hull. She wanted maximum casualties. She wanted to take as many with her as possible. And she lifted the camera above her head with both hands. "Come on!" she shrieked. But the cabin was thick with swirling clouds of white, acrid smoke, and the dangling hoses twisted and writhed like the head of the Medusa. She heard the thunder of a shot pistol, and somebody screamed. Voices were chanting, "Lie down! Everybody, lie down!" It was all smoke and sound and confusion, but she watched the dark opening of the emergency hatchway, waiting for it, finger on the detonator button of the camera. A supple, black-clad figure in a grotesque mask torpedoed feet first into the cabin, and at that same instant, Karen shrieked beside her, "No, don't kill us!" and snatched the camera from Ingrid's raised hands, jerking it away by the strap, leaving Ingrid weaponless. Karen ran down the aisle through the smoke, still screaming, "Don't kill us!" holding the camera like a peace offering. "Caliph said we would not die!" She ran forward, screaming frantically, "Caliph!" And the black-clad and masked figure twisted lithely in the air, arching his back to land feet first in the center of the aisle. As his feet touched the deck, so the pistol in his right hand jerked up sharply. But the shot seemed muted and unwarlike after the concussion of the stun grenades. Karen was running down the aisle towards him, screaming and brandishing the camera, when the bullet took her in the mouth and wrenched her head backwards at an impossible angle. The next two shots blended into a single blurt of sound, fired so swiftly as to cheat the hearing, and from such close range that even the Velex explosive bullets ripped the back out of Karen's shirt and flooded it with a brighter, wetter scarlet as they erupted from between her shoulder blades. The camera went spinning high across the cabin, landing in the lap of an unconscious passenger, slumped in one of the central seats between the aisles. Ingrid reacted with the instinctive speed of a jungle cat, diving forward, flat on the carpet aisle below the line of fire. shrouded by the sinking white smoke of the grenades, she wriggled forward on her belly to reach the camera. It was 20 feet to where the camera had landed, but Ingrid moved with the speed of a serpent. She knew that the smoke was hiding her, but she knew also that to reach the camera she would have to come to her feet again and reach across 2 seats and 2 unconscious bodies. Peter landed in balance on the carpeted aisle, and he killed the girl swiftly and danced aside, clearing space for his number 2 to land. The next man landed lightly in the space Peter had made for him, and the German in the red shirt jumped out from the angle of the rear galley and hit him in the small of the back with a full charge of buckshot. It almost blew his body into 2 separate parts, and he seemed to break in the middle like a folding penknife as he collapsed against Peter's legs. Peter whirled at the shot, turning his back on Ingrid as she crawled forward through the phosphorus smoke. Kurt was desperately trying to pull down the short, thick barrel of the pistol, for the recoil had thrown it high above his head. His scarlet shirt was open to the navel. Shiny, hard brown muscle and thick walls of black body hair, mad, glaring eyes through a greasy fringe of black hair, the scarred lip curling in a fixed snarl. Peter hit him in the chest, taking no chance, and as he reeled backwards, still fighting to aim the pistol, Peter hit again, in the head through the temple, just in front of the left ear. The eyelids closed tightly over those wild eyes. His features twisted out of shape like a rubber mask, and he went down, face first, into the aisle. 2. Peter found that, as always in these desperate moments, he was functioning very coldly, very efficiently. His shooting had been as reflexively perfect as if he were walking a combat chute with jump-up cardboard targets. He had even counted his shots. There were 4 left in the Walter. And 2 more of them, he thought. But the smoke was still so thick that his visibility was down to under 15 feet, and the swirling forest of dangling oxygen hose, still agitated by the grenade blasts, cut down his visibility further. He jumped over the broken body of his number 2, the blood squelching under his rubber soles, and suddenly the chunky black figure of Colin Noble loomed across the cabin. He was in the far aisle, having come in over the starboard wing. In the writhing smoke he looked like some demon from the pit, hideous and menacing in his gas mask. He dropped into the marksman's crouch, holding the big Browning in a double-handed grip, and the clangor of the gun beat upon the air like one of the great bronze bells of Notre Dame. He was shooting at another scarlet-shirted figure, half seen through the smoke and the dangling hoses, a man with a round boyish face and drooping sandy moustache. The big Velex bullets tore the hijacker to pieces with the savagery of a predator's claws. They seemed to pin him like an insect to the central bulkhead, and they smashed chunks of living flesh from his chest and splinters of white bone from his skull. 3, thought Peter. 1 left now, and I must get the camera. He had seen the black camera in the hands of the girl he had killed, had seen it fall, and he knew how deadly important it was to secure the detonator before it fell into the hands of the other girl, the blonde one, the dangerous one. It had been only 4 seconds since he had penetrated the hull, yet it seemed like a dragging eternity. He could hear the crash of the slap hammers tearing out the door locks, both fore and aft. Within seconds there would be 4 assault teams pouring into the Boeing through every opening, and he had not yet located the 4th hijacker, the truly dangerous one. "Get down! Everybody down!" chanted the grenade men, and Peter spun lightly and ran for the flight deck. He was certain the blonde girl would be there at the control center. Then, in front of him, lay the girl he had shot down, the long dark hair spread out around her pale, still terrified face. Her hair was already sodden with dark blood, and the black gap in her white teeth made her look like an old woman. She blocked the aisle with a tangle of slim, boneless limbs. The forward hatch crashed open as the lock gave way, but there were still solid curtains of white smoke ahead of him. Peter gathered himself to jump over the girl's body, and at that instant the other girl, the blonde girl, bounded up from the deck, seeming to appear miraculously from the smoke, like some beautiful but evil apparition. She dived half across the block of central seating, groping for the camera. And Peter was slightly off balance, blocking himself in the turn to bring his gun hand onto her. He changed hands smoothly, for he was equally accurate with either. But it cost him the tenth part of a second, and the girl had the strap of the camera now, and was tugging desperately at it. The camera seemed to be snagged, and Peter swung on her, taking the headshot, for she was less than 10 paces away, and even in the smoke and confusion, he could not miss. One of the few passengers who'd been breathing oxygen from his hanging mask and was still conscious ignored the chanted orders, "Get down, stay down," and suddenly stumbled to his feet, screaming, "Don't shoot! Get me out of here! Don't shoot!" in a rising hysterical scream. He was directly between Peter and the red-shirted girl, blocking off Peter's field of fire, and Peter wrenched the gun off him at the moment that he fired. The bullet slammed into the roof, and the passenger barged into Peter, still screaming, "Get me out! I want to get out!" Peter tried desperately to clear his gun hand, for the girl had broken the strap of the camera and was fumbling with a black box. The passenger had an arm round Peter's gun arm and was shaking him wildly, weeping and screaming. From across the central block of seats, Colin Noble fired once. He was still in the starboard aisle, and the angle was almost impossible, for he had to shoot 9 inches past Peter's shoulder and through the forest of dangling hose. His first shot missed, but it was close enough to flinch the girl's head violently. The golden hair flickered with the passage of shot, and she stumbled backwards, groping with clumsy fingers for the detonator. Peter chopped the hysterical passenger in the throat with the stiffened fingers of his right hand and hurled him back into his seat, trying desperately to line up for a shot at the girl, knowing he must get the brain and still her fingers instantly. Colin fired his second shot, 1/100 of a second before Peter, and the big bullet flung the girl aside, jerking her head out of the track of Peter's shot. Peter saw the strike of Colin's bullet. It hit her high in the right shoulder, almost in the joint of the scapula and the humerus, shattering the bone with such force that her arm was flung upwards in a parody of a communist salute, twisting unnaturally and whipping above her head. Once again, the camera was flung aside, and the girl's body was thrown violently backwards down the aisle, as though she'd been hit by a speeding automobile. Peter picked his shot, waiting for a clean, killing hit in the head as the girl tried to drag herself upright. But before he could fire, a mass of black-costumed figures swarmed out of the smoke and covered the girl, pinning her, kicking and screaming, on the carpet of the aisle. The Thor team had come in through the forward hatch just in time to save her life. And Peter clipped the Walter into his holster and stooped to pick up the camera gingerly. Then he pulled off his mask with his other hand. "That's it. That's all of them," he shouted. "We got 'em all. Cease fire. It's all over." Then into the microphone of the transceiver. "Touchdown! Touchdown!" The code for total success. Three of his men were holding the girl down, and despite the massive spurting wound in her shoulder, she fought like a leopard in a trap. "Get the emergency chutes down," Peter ordered. And from each exit, the long plastic slides inflated and drooped to the tarmac. Already his men were leading the conscious passengers to the exits and helping them into the slide. From the terminal building, a dozen ambulances with sirens howling gunned out across the tarmac. The backup members of Thor were running out under the glare of floodlights, cheering thinly, "Touchdown! Touchdown!" Like prehistoric monsters, the mechanical stairways lumbered down from the northern apron to give access to the body of the Boeing. Peter stepped up to the girl, still holding the camera in his hands, and he stood looking down at her,